This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
But if you could generate the same sort of excitement on electric Formula E, then essentially you'd probably accelerate the adoption of electric cars.
Even casual fans of Formula One or F1 racing may have noticed that the popular motorsport has annual Grand Prix events spanning the globe, from Baku to Shanghai to Sao Paulo. And this calendar, our guest on this week's Sea Change Radio argues, comprises a larger portion of F1's greenhouse gas emissions than the racing itself. Today we speak with Alexis Normand, the CEO of Greenly, to discuss his company's new report assessing the annual carbon footprint of F1 racing. We compare Greenly's sustainability report with F1's own internal one, look at some of the problems with F1's methodologies, and talk about ways to lessen the sport's environmental impact. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Alexis Normand. He's the CEO of Greenly. Alexis, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be here, Alex.
So maybe you can first explain to us what service Greenly provides to its customers, Alexis.
Yeah, so essentially Greenly helps about 3,000 companies measure their carbon emissions and also set a roadmap for reducing their emissions, improving their impact. And what's specific about our work is that we essentially put tech into the process to make it easy for, you know, not just a big corporation, but maybe a mid-market company to upload all the data easily, maybe have some AI structure this in a easier way, and then put a metric on your emissions, on your direct emissions, what you consume in terms of, say, fossil fuels, but also on your supply chain emissions and also on your products.
Maybe we can start with a recent finding that you and your colleagues came out with examining the carbon footprint of F1 racing, which was pretty shocking to see what they were reporting versus what your findings are. Maybe you can walk us through your findings, some of those, and then we can go back and look at how you approach it versus how F1 might approach measuring their own carbon footprint.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we find basically a sixfold underestimation by the F1 organizations is because we follow standard methodology. So this is codified by a thing called the GHG protocol, Greenhouse Gas Emission Protocol. But it's not necessarily mandatory to report along those frameworks. So some organizations might decide to report only on a subset of what's expected by the standard. And so I can explain. Typically, when you take any organization, or including an events organization, you'd look at what we call direct emissions, scope one. So in the case of Formula One, it's pretty easy to understand. You have a car, right? And you will burn a lot of fuel just to keep the cars racing. But now it's every other vehicle, not just the ones on the race, right? The organization's car to get there, the buses, the transportation, any machine that you own, basically, that you put fuel into or gas, that's your direct emissions. You burn something, it releases emissions. And then there's a thing called scope two, which is indirect emissions linked to electricity. So if I'm putting the lights on, you know, if I'm running machines on electricity, whatever, I take all this energy and somewhere there's a utility plant and it's burning some kind of fuel to power me up. So it's my scope two, you know, I'm somehow responsible, right? Because I could use less of that electricity. And then there's scope three, it's everything else. So if I'm a business making cars, for instance, or running cars like F1, well, I'm buying cars. I'm coming to the Grand Prix through an airplane. Maybe my audience is coming to the Grand Prix using their own cars, using their own airplane. So because I'm setting up this event, this organization, because I'm you know, I need to buy a ton of goods or get a lot of people coming, I'm indirectly generating a lot of emissions. So that's scope three. Okay, and here we're taking the case of a Grand Prix organization, but you know, it's this framework works for every organization. And so if I go back to F1, you have the organization saying, look, we've generated roughly 170,000 tons of CO2 a year to run the Grand Prix, and it's essentially the cars running on the tracks.
Not the idea that they're going to 24 different locations all around the globe. That's not part of that. It's just like saying, okay, the World Cup is only these guys running around on the soccer pitch, and they're not producing a lot of greenhouse gas emissions, so the World Cup only produces X amount of carbon emissions. Is that analogous?
To be fair, it would be a bit more even for the World Cup, because you'd include maybe, you know, the stadiums, maybe the FIFA's organization. So in the case of F1, you know, all the stuff around just making the event happen.
So they do include the audience and the stadium that holds the spectators for Formula One racing. It's just they're not considering all the transport that goes into moving all these locations. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. So we estimate it's sixfold increase, so basically 1 million ton of CO2. And the main reason for that is because we think we saw that they didn't include their so-called scope 3, so all the stuff that goes around organizing the events. And so essentially, it's all the spectators coming. So when you organize an event, it's always the same thing, Olympic Games, you know, World Cups, baseball matches. Well, really what's driving the emissions is all the people coming to the event. And it's like a tenfold increase. So what we observed is that this was totally disregarded, right? So if you look at the FIFA's breakdown, okay, they take about a third of the emissions is their logistics. So they do take into account that the fact that you know, you need to move the cars around from one Grand Prix to another, the team, the staff, that's the other third. Then they're like the factories, right? You need to build the cars. And then the race operations is only about 15%. So that's what Formula One accounts for. And it gives you about 7 tons of CO2 per Grand Prix. Just to put things in perspective, a ton of CO2 is like a flight back and forth from New York to Paris. Or maybe another data point, an American would emit on average about 20 tons of CO2 a year. A European is more like 10, 11. We have smaller cars, smaller houses, and so on. Here you're talking 7,000 tons of CO2 per Grand Prix. So it's like roughly, according to FIFA's estimation, let's say about 5,000 Europeans a year. Okay. But now what we estimate is that the indirect footprint is grossly underestimated, because what essentially the organization is not estimating is the spectator travels. And that's huge. It's about this, roughly 700,000 tons of CO2. Their accommodation, that's a bit less. Their food, the merchandising, the TV broadcasting, and the on-site. So essentially, the main thing that's been forgotten is all the crowds that are drawn to these events. And by the way, this remark is true of every event. So we made the similar analysis for the Olympic Games. Which means, like, when you organize a major event, well, we're not saying you shouldn't do it. We're saying you should think about the way that these events impact a wider ecosystem. And so, of course, you know, people can come in a certain way. People can go remote. Maybe it's easier if there's less planes traveling to the event, and so on and so forth. So it's not a judgment. It's just to say, if you're going to do the accounting exercise, you might as well follow best practice and account for everything, because if you're F1 and you're saying we're doing great, we're estimating it, we've really looked into our emissions, here's what we're going to do, I say, yes, you know, a great way to go. But then go the full length, include the spectators, because there's a lot more that you can do to improve that impact. And I'm not saying stop, you know, the events or anything like that.
Here comes Speed Racer, he's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to the CEO of Greenlee, Alexis Normand. So, Alexis, we're talking about Formula One, F1 Racing's sustainability report and how it falls woefully short. You were just talking about how they are not accounting for the spectators and the ancillary emissions that are coming from those things. But in the same breath, when these organizations, not just F1, but the Olympics or FIFA, whenever they're trying to sell, or a Super Bowl, whenever they're trying to sell a community on hosting one of these events, they absolutely consider all those ancillary revenues, right? They're saying, oh, you're going to fill all those hotel rooms. You're going to be bringing in billions of dollars into your community, so you should be hosting it.
Yep.
But so they want it both ways. On one hand, they want to say, yes, you're going to be bringing all this economic activity to the region, but they don't want to necessarily include that in their sustainability report.
No, so exactly. So here, in the case of F1, there are about 6 million spectators attending about 24 races worldwide. So essentially a ton of flights everywhere, and, you know, why not? But in general, we've done a lot of those estimations of big events. And we see a pattern, which is you have usually a little bit of a big underestimation, but sometimes it's outright greenwashing. So the Qatar World Cup, basically saying it's carbon neutral, and it was in fact the worst ever World Cup from that perspective, because they underestimated a ton of flights. But, you know, I mean, okay, we know it's going to emit, but then don't say it's neutral, especially if the offsets are more or less fake offsets or like not like fully guaranteed. And I don't want to go too deep into that, but it's essentially, okay, we financed a couple forests, but are we even sure that these trees wouldn't have been planted anyway? So it was a very dubious claim. But of course, we've seen, because precisely journalists report on those greenwashing claims, we've seen events organizers try to like figure out what the best practice would be for this. And so what we saw with the Paris Olympic Games, for instance, is that they said, okay, look, we're going to try and do better than other events, but we're also going to think about, okay, here's a massive investment push that we're going to be, putting into infrastructures and so on. So let's try to think how these investments can make our infrastructures more sustainable, so that when we build a new stadium or a new swimming pool or whatever, we make sure it's reusable over a very long period of time. So there's amortization, and these infrastructures are themselves more sustainable because maybe your swimming pool emits less energy or something, right? Or you're going to invest into your transportation infrastructure so that not everybody rides a car, you know, to the games, but then you have much better subways and so on and so forth. So we're not saying don't do these events, but use the investment push as a way to create more sustainable infrastructures. And of course, the first step to doing that is to be a little honest about your overall impact and not say, okay, let's only focus on what we think we can work on, whereas really we can work on all the rest, which is in this specific case, like the spectators, basically.
Yes, and when we talk about the overall impact of a sport and not just a race, I think F1 really stands alone in terms of its overall impact. A lot of the popularity of Formula One racing in this country, at least, has been accelerated by the popularity of the Netflix documentary series Drive to Survive. Very popular with people who may not even watch the race, but they like watching this documentary. And if you do watch Drive to Survive, you will notice that the race is just one very small part of this whole process. There's the training and the development of the cars, and the transport is almost always either helicopter or private jet. There's not a lot of commercial flights happening or big yachts in Monte Carlo. It's very opulent, and it's about as carbon intensive a sport as one can possibly imagine. So when they came up with their sustainability report, are they just talking about the races? Are they talking about the development of a car and all the things behind the scenes that go into their sport, Alexis?
I think they did a good job, you know, at talking about the organization itself. So they did look into like their own logistics. And so it means when they report, I mean, let's give them a little credit. You know, you talk about the jets and all this stuff. Well, you know, it's 37% of their emissions, according to their own account. So they know they got to work on this. Okay. Then it's the steam and staff travel, so that's 30%. The factories, the race itself, again, let's not forget, is only 13%. So all the fuel you pour into these cars. But I think we tend to neglect the fact that these sports drive huge crowds that fly into where the races happen, okay? And you know, you would say, oh, but then, you know, we don't do any sports or anything like that. Well, I don't agree. You know, when the stuff happens in Monte Carlo, because it's one of the most famous races, there are plenty of trains to get there if you're a European. Of course, if you fly all the way from some other place, well, maybe you can wait for the next race that's closer to you and get there. So I think the whole point about spectator travel is important. And, you know, I mean, it's not like there's nothing we can do about it. Well, first of all, there are alternative ways to get to an event, and it has a huge impact. And even if there isn't any other way but flying, raising the question actually accelerates how the aviation industry thinks about replacing their existing kerosene with, you know, so-called clean fuel or electrifying flights. I mean, what's beautiful about F1, it's an engineering challenge. You know, everybody's impressed. Well, there's an engineering challenge to getting crowds to an event as well. That could be addressed with the same kind of ingenuity, you know?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Alexis Normand. He is the CEO of Greenlee. So, Alexis, we're talking about the engineering challenges that F1 racing takes on. Let's turn for a second to their Formula E, something that they've been touting for a while as an alternative to their combustion engine racing. It doesn't have the sound, the sizzle, and the sexiness of the traditional F1, but these cars are coming pretty close in terms of top speeds to the combustion engine. I think a 230 miles an hour top speed for the combustion engine versus 200 miles an hour for the electric. But
full disclosure, Formula E is a customer of Greenlee. So I am more biased into, you know, this.
With that caveat, could we someday see Formula E replacing Formula One in your estimation?
As we said, you know, like what our counter study, so to speak, shows is that the biggest emissions driver of an event is actually the crowds that it draws. So today, Formula E doesn't drive as many crowds. So for that reason, it's much less emissive. But even if you like just focus on the self-reported F1 scope, right, which is the events, the organization, the internal stuff, you'd still have the logistics, you'd still have the team travel, the factories. The race itself, right, is 13% for Formula One. So I don't have the precise figures for Formula E, but essentially if you reduce, if you replace an internal combustion engine car by a electric car, it turns to zero, you know, because it's all, I mean, a little... Don't quote me exactly on this, because you still need to power up the car. And so the electricity that you put into the car is if fueled by some utility. And if it's nuclear energy, it's peanuts in terms of emissions. It's like 15 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour. And if the electricity is fueled by a coal power station, it's 600 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour, or more or less. So there are differences, but overall... the electric car drastically reduces, the emissions for driving. Now, if you think system-wise, the driving itself is not that much in the overall thing, right? Because you're part of an ecosystem.
And that development of electric cars, which is vital to transforming our transport systems in so many ways. And that was one of the reasons why these traditional automakers have invested so heavily in F1 racing, and a lot of them now have electric vehicle versions of their cars. So what's the trickle-down effect maybe of turning more to Formula E?
Exactly my point. I mean, if you think of beyond the emissions of the events or the wider events with the spectators, why are manufacturers doing this? It's to get excitement on cars. So we show you the best of the best of a technology, you know, how fast it can go with the best drivers. And it gets people excited about cars. And so I guess F1 pulls people towards ICE, cars. So yeah, I want maybe not the same car, of course, but the same brand. You know, if they can win an F1 race, it's got to be the one Mercedes or Renault or whatever that I can get is amazing, you know, Ferrari. So that's perfect. And I think that's probably the wider impact, which, to be fair, we haven't measured, right? But if you could generate the same sort of excitement on electric Formula E, then essentially you'd probably accelerate the adoption of electric cars. You have a lot of people, they just like a good old combustion engine car, you know? But if you can show you have the same performance, today, you know, in... at least in Europe, I'm not too sure about the US figures, but it's about 20% of new cars are electric, but that has just constantly increased. So if you're a car manufacturer, you see a lot more growth in your electric cars than in your ICE engine cars, because that more or less is toppled or is slightly declining, right? So it's the, in volume, it doesn't your electric car sales don't compensate your loss for your ICEs, but it's still the growing trend. So I think if you think about sports racing, you'd want, it's a kind of a marketing tool for the car industry. So take a step back. We absolutely need to decarbonize transportation. It's 33% of global emissions. And there's only one way to do it. You know, it's electrify everything. So start with personal cars, then do logistics, transportation, trucks, you know, all these things. And so, yes, you know, you need to create some excitement. It can't just be like all about doing the right thing. You know, you need people to feel they have a better product when they have an electric car. So I think that's what we need to start thinking about.
Looking at some of the solutions that Greenlee proposes in their sustainability report, you lean in towards having more events located closer together. How can that be achieved logistically? Is that something that F1 racing is considering? And will we see an adjustment in their schedule?
Couple things. So the number one lever, right, is reduce fan travel emissions. So way you do this, you know how you market an event is you say this region, this place, you need to sell X amount of tickets and, you know, discount this until everything goes away. So I think there's a, even in your marketing strategy, you want local spectators, basically, as much as possible. And if they are going to travel, well, rail, of course, would have a huge impact. So if it's a European race, you know, don't market in the US, market in Europe, things like that. Of course, you can promote shared mobility, buses, shuttles, regional attendance incentives, etc. The other thing is also the race calendar. So if you regionalize the calendar and you cluster the races, you can actually have a lot of better impact on this.
I know that their calendar is a little traditional. People expect Le Mans to be at the same time every year. But with climate change, we're seeing some of these very harsh climates hosting F1 events. Does that come into effect? I mean, you see like Dallas, Texas and Bahrain and some very hot places. Has F1 taken steps to host those events in traditionally cooler times?
It's a good idea. I don't think they have because, you know, as you said, it's like the tradition. And then, you know, these events usually are organized a year in advance. So no one really wants to move the organization, right? But fundamentally, if you clustered the race geographically along the calendar, you'd probably win 10, 20% on those travels. You could have more nighttime races and so on. The last decarbonization lever, of course, and we kind of talked about it as well, is the decarbonization of transport and logistics. So you can't dance faster than the music here, right? You need sustainable aviation fuels to go faster. But imagine this, like, hey, Formula One insisting that their events flights use e-fuels and so on. I mean, don't when you host such a popular sport, you have huge influence on public, you have huge influence on your vendors, and whatever you ask, you make your vendors move faster on. So I think we haven't seen enough of these events organizers ask aviation companies to move faster on cleaner fuels, you know. Last but not least, think about the infrastructure. You still have, you know, new Formula One races and so on. So like the Olympic Games, like the World Cups, you want to use these massive investments pushes to also have cleaner infrastructures. Because that stays over the long term. You don't usually use an infrastructure just once. You use it for a lot of events. And if they are built in a more sustainable way, you basically have buildings that consume less over the long run. We're not saying get to zero. We're saying maybe align yourself with the trajectory of reducing global emissions, which is more like a 5-7% thing a year. So 5-7% thing a year doesn't mean a huge sacrifice. We're not telling people stop everything you're doing, you know. That's the idea. We're talking about a transition.
Alexis Normand is the CEO of Greenly. Alexis, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by U2 and CJ Chenier. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week, as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.